We're here at Indiana Black Expo, and obviously there's the rallies for, dealing with Trayvon Martin that'll be in 100 cities, including Indianapolis, tomorrow from noon until 1. But evidently within the last hour, the President of the United States went into the White House briefing room making his first live comments since the Florida jury acquitted George Zimmerman last Saturday. We've got those comments. Let's go and hear what the President of the United States had to say.
When Trayvon Martin was first shot, I said that this could have been my son. Another way of saying that is Trayvon Martin could have been me 35 years ago. And when you think about why, in the African-American community at least, there's a lot of pain around what happened here, I think it's important to recognize that the African-American community is looking at this issue through a set of experiences and a history that that doesn't go away. You know, there are very few African-American men in this country who haven't had the experience of being followed when they were shopping in a department store. That includes me. There are very, very few African-American men who haven't had the experience of walking across the street and hearing the locks click on the doors of cars. That happens to me, at least before I was a senator. There are very few African-Americans who haven't had the experience of getting on an elevator and a woman clutching her purse nervously and holding her breath until she had a chance to get off. That happens often. And you know, I don't want to exaggerate this, but those sets of experiences inform how the African-American community interprets what happened one night in Florida. And it's inescapable for people to bring those experiences to bear. The African-American community is also knowledgeable that there is a history of racial disparities in the application of our criminal laws, everything from the death penalty to enforcement of our drug laws. And that ends up having an impact in terms of how people interpret the case. Now, this isn't to say that the African-American community is naive about the fact that African-American young men are disproportionately involved in the criminal justice system, that they're disproportionately both victims and perpetrators of violence. It's not to make excuses for that fact, although black folks do interpret the reasons for that in a historical context. They understand that some of the violence that takes place in poor black neighborhoods around the country is born out of a very violent past in this country, and that the poverty and dysfunction that we see in those communities can be traced to a very difficult history. And so the fact that sometimes that's unacknowledged adds to the frustration.
Remarks of the President of the United States, very remarkable remarks of the President of the United States, talking about his experiences as being an African-American male in this country, addressing the Trayvon Martin situation and addressing the problems of black-on-black violence in cities across the country. A very personal remark from the President in the briefing room an hour ago.
And as somebody who sees the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman thing through a little bit of a different prism, I will say the President is right in the sense that, you know, as African-American male, you know, happened in college, happened in graduate school, you know, you're in the grocery store, the security guard kind of, you know, follows you around a
little
bit.
Women clutching their purses in an elevator.
Yeah, never had that. I did have the security guard follow me once in the store. And so I just took it a different way. I walked with the security guard. It's like, hey, I noticed you were following me.
Mm-hmm.
You want to help me out? Because I'm looking for something.
Right.
you know, you kind of throw that back at them, and then they, you know, kind of throws them for a curve. However, I still think that, for example, the day after the verdict came out, everybody and his mother was an attorney. Mm-hmm. And everybody graduated from law school, and everybody had tried a criminal case because everybody started mouthing off an opinion. The thing is, we were not there. We did not hear all the evidence that went before that jury. We didn't know what happened in an exclusionary rule hearings and preliminary trials. We have to respect the jury decision, because if we don't, we have mob justice, and people like Terry Curry cannot do his job if you're going to bow to public pressure because the public believes a certain way.
Speaking of prosecutors, Terry Curry is here. Let me ask you the first question. One of the things that have come out in some of the commentary after the verdict last Saturday night was the importance of everyone, especially in minority communities, African-American communities. When you get the jury duty summons, don't throw it away. It is serious business. We can't deal with a lack of diversity on juries if there's not a lack of diversity in the people in the pool to begin with.
Oh, absolutely, and you know, I don't believe that is a problem in Marion County, because clearly as we see juries, you know, week after week after week, our juries tend to reflect our community in terms of diversity. But absolutely, I mean the voice of a jury needs to be the voice of the community, and if a segment of the community is not included, or in some instances has been in the past systematically excluded, then that undermines our sense of justice.
Two situations like the Martin Zimmerman incident, Terry, make it more difficult for you folks to do your job, because sometimes, and it's not just maybe that, maybe we talk about Casey Anthony, or, you know, go all the way back to an O.J. Simpson, that people see these very nationalized, televised trials, cameras in the courtroom, and maybe get a perception that is not the day-to-day operations of a normal court system.
Yeah, I think that's a fair observation, and I think it goes beyond just that. It's sort of a combination of, as you said, these national trials that get coverage as sad as it is to say that I agree with what your observations earlier, is there's two issues here in the Trayvon Martin cases. Number one, you know, should he have been profiled as he obviously was? Absolutely not. And that's a vestige of you know, racism in this country. But the trial is a separate and distinct proceeding, and ultimately it's a question of whether they can prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. And if there's problematic witnesses in that trial or any trial, it's a problem. But I think you're right in terms of sort of skewing the attitude of jurors coming in, some at least, as the combination of television, movies, sensational trials, it does give people an inaccurate picture of what a jury should look like and what a jury trial should consist of.
Let's go down to what crime is going on here. What is the role of the prosecutor's office in terms of what IMPD and the men and women of law enforcement are doing to keep neighborhoods safe? As they work in these targeted areas trying to reduce crime, are your deputy prosecutors out there, the neighborhood prosecutors out there, working with law enforcement?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, our community prosecutors are out there every single day. We have a division within our office of community prosecutors who work out of the districts, and they're interacting with the community every single day in terms of quality of life issues in any given neighborhood. But in addition, yes, the most recent operation that was dubbed Operation Gotham, our deputy prosecutors, our office, have been involved in the planning of that since day one. And the five targeted zones, we had a dedicated prosecutor in each of those zones who worked with the police officers, answering any legal questions, preparing search warrants, that sort of thing. And so, yes, we've been part of that since the first day. And there are additional phases of that going forward that we can't talk about. But it was more than just a plan to have a saturation over a discrete period of time. And so there are phases going forward that we'll be involved in as well.
One of the things I noticed, Terry, and I'm interested to get your perspective as a prosecutor. A couple very publicized incidents. Seamus Patton didn't necessarily serve his entire sentence when he was rearrested. Looks like the shooter from the 4th of July downtown had a prior criminal record, only served maybe like 30-something days of what looked like, at least on the surface, be a year to a two-year sentence. The chief just mentioned a few minutes ago that a lot of these guys who are doing the crime have been convicted of other crimes, but either they're getting out early or they're not serving their full sentence. Does the reform the legislature did, is that going to help mitigate some of that, or do we need to maybe even go back and, you know, look at how we distribute, who gets out early, and when it's time for people to go to jail, be like the federal government, you're going in for 85%, and that's the end of discussion.
Right. And certainly that's the intent of the code revision that has just been passed by the most recent legislature. With a few exceptions, the new standard will be that you serve 75% of your sentence. Now, having said that, I certainly agree with the concept that we should provide motivation for offenders to better themselves, to get their GED, to work on a college education, and if they do that, to get some sort of credit. Unfortunately, what's happened over the years is as they've grafted on sort of discrete provisions to address those things, we've reached a point where we have these situations such as Chris Wheat, the former Lawrence swim coach who got out in about a year and a half of an eight-year sentence, Seamus as well. And so hopefully the revision of the code will provide a more consistent pattern for the sentencing and serving of that sentence.
Terry Curry.
And by the way, are you guys going to send a message to anybody who decides to act?
Oh, wait a minute. We got to find out. Is there some kind of Indiana statute about the loudness of the PA system here at Expo?
Not that I'm aware of. I think we'll exercise prosecutorial discretion to just kind of overlook that.
And I'm assuming you guys are also sending a message that you work with your partners at IMPD and other law enforcement, that if you come down here tomorrow night, we expect you'd be good citizens to behave, but if you get out of line, we're bringing down the hammer?
Absolutely.
Will there be deputy prosecutors out here tomorrow night?
Through the APC, the Rusty Process Center, we'll certainly have that staffed, and we're hoping it'll be a quiet night, and I have every confidence it will be.
All right, Prosecutor Terry Curry, thanks very, very much. One of the busy people here is the Marion County Clerk, Beth White, and this coming Thursday, we're having a special edition of Afternoons with Amos, going to try to walk people through the new expungement law. And one of the things that we're learning about the law, yes, it's going to benefit people. Yes, it was passed with bipartisan support, and two of the authors of the bill, Senator Greg Taylor and State Representative Jug McMillan, will be with us on Thursday. But it is a very detailed, you got to dot your I's, cross your T's. Is the system now in place in our court system?
It is. However, it's important for people to know they really cannot do this without preparation and without legal assistance. We are working on forms that we can give to people so that they know how to do this. You can file them now, but you've got to know what you're doing. Don't come into my office and just say, I'm here to file for my expungement, because it's not that simple.
Is part of the preparation, particularly with an offense that might be 10 or 15 or 20 years old, or even an arrest where the charges were dropped long ago, even remembering the court or the courthouse or any kind of information about whose court were you in?
Well, we can help people with that. If they have obviously know their social security number, dates of birth, we can look that up. The real challenge is the pleading that you have to file. Of course, the pleading being the legal term for the document that has to be filed in my office. You don't just file your criminal history and say, remove this one. You have to do a specific pleading and pay the filing fee. And a lot of people are caught off guard by that.
One of the things, Beth, that's happened in other states where they engage in expungement is, it's like you said, it's a very complicated process. They've almost sort of been victimized by some scam artists say, hey, we can call our number, we can clean your record for you, then they don't fill out the paperwork. Is that something that folks should be aware of as we begin this expungement process?
Absolutely, absolutely. We want to make sure people understand that all the information they need is on my website in indy.gov/clerk. They can find out what they need to find out. Never, ever pay anybody up front who is not a lawyer to do this for you. If they're a lawyer, we have procedures to follow to make sure that they're doing it correctly. But do not fall victim to these scams. People should go to my website or come into my office. We will help you, but you do need to fill out the forms properly.
Is this also something that we need to be approaching our law schools, whether it's the McKinney Law School here, the Maurer Law School down in Bloomington, some of the others, to provide that opportunity for maybe these 2Ls and 3L law students, that gives them some practical practice in helping people prepare those petitions? I don't think that would violate the rules of law school.
I think they could probably help prepare the petition. I don't think they could legally sign it.
No, they can't sign it. Yeah, but they can help prepare it.
There is a student practice rule that's been in effect for a long time if you are at 3L and you have certain supervision. I think the law schools would be terrific getting involved in this. This is more of a really just helping people through this process. They can do it themselves without a lawyer, but somebody needs to help them and make sure they've done it correctly.
And I know we're going to have somebody from the clerk's office with us on Thursday as part of our special broadcast, walking people through all of this.
Absolutely true, yes. We will make somebody available. It may or may not be me. I have another conflict, but Myla Eldridge from my office, Scott Hull from my office. We want to help people, and it's a little complicated, so we want to make sure people know what they're doing so they do it right.
Got to ask you real quick. I know you folks have been working on the voter education engagement project, recommendations. Coming together, what's going to come out of that?
Yeah. Well, what is coming out is a report, and that report will be submitted to the election board at the August meeting. The report does not specifically say we need this kind of equipment in this kind of way. What it does say is here are the things we agree about. Voting should be accessible, secure, the equipment should be easier to use than the equipment we have now. So the report is a comprehensive look at some recommendations about the voting experience as a whole, which is why we're calling it the Voter Experience Project.
Because I know there's always been the talk about moving to vote centers. Does that mean we can get rid of precincts?
No.
We're not getting rid of no precincts right now. We're not doing that.
I want to be on record saying that vote centers may or may not be a good option for Marion County. There are controversies associated with them. They are, like everything, it's a mixed bag. Sometimes they're better in some instances. In other instances, they are not better. But what's important is it's not my decision to make. It's not your decision to make, Abdul. Amos, it's not even your decision to make.
Who gets to make it?
The community gets to make it. Working with a big group of constituents, political parties, community groups, the City County Council, other stakeholders in City County government, and the mayor gets to weigh in.
All right. Our Marion County Clerk, Beth White, thanks very much for being with us. When we come back, many have wondered, how can I deal with this boy Abdul on Fridays? Well, back in the day, several years ago, I had to work on the air nationally with a conservative, with a Republican, who was prettier than Abdul. We're talking about Cheryl Underwood, the star of CBS's The Talk. We'll talk to her after this break. It's a special edition of Amos and Abdul live from Indiana Black Expo after these. And we are back live at Indiana Black Expo. You know, we said we were privileged yesterday to talk to the international president of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority. Her predecessor is in the house. She is the star of CBS's show, The Talk. The show that's kicking the view and whatever. She's got all kind of things going on. She is the one and only Cheryl Underwood. You see, Cheryl, what you saddled me with in those months doing radio nationally, now I got to deal with him every Friday.
Well, that's a good thing to deal with. Everybody needs an Abdul on the side.
Why, thank you.
That's right. Everybody needs that. But the real reason that we're here is the Black Expo is the place to be. This is where all black people come to congregate and our guests and friends who are not black but love us also. And then, you know, tomorrow we're going to do something that is necessary. We have a right to publicly assemble peacefully, as Dr. King trained us, at 12 noon to march for Trayvon Martin all over the world. It ain't just going to be in America. It's going to be all over the world.
Now, this conservative brother disagrees with you, my sister.
I believe that you have the right to protest.
Right.
Because it's an American God-given right.
Yes.
However, my issue is that there are Trayvon Martins in this community, a number of communities that are shot dead every day. Chicago, a record homicide rate.
Yes.
The city of Indianapolis, 66%
yes.
of the murder victims have been young African-Americans.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
And I wait for the day that folks are going to come out and do the same thing for them.
Well, we will do the same thing for them. But first, our people need something that they can gravitate to. And once they do it, then we pull together. Look how the preachers came together. Look how politicians came together. Look how people of different races. When you got Bruce Springsteen in Ireland dedicating a song that he wrote for another brother that got 41 shots, this is where it starts. So I agree with you. Yes, we're going to need to go to Chicago. But this is where it starts. And if we don't start, we will never stop something like this happening again.
But why is it worse if George Zimmerman, who is not white but Latino Hispanic, shoots an African American male? We get all upset, but black folks are killing black folks, and we sort of,
No, that's not true.
We get upset.
Thank you,
brother. I think the brother over here expects a rally and a march every day. It doesn't work that way.
That's right. And what the first thing you got to do is change laws. Second thing you got to do is you got to get organized. We can't just be doing something willy-nilly. And after this verdict came out, unfortunately, a lot of people said, oh, they're going to win. No. The Stand Your Ground law, it was the defense that the defense used to protect Zimmerman. But don't forget, there are over 30-some states that either have it as a law or a defense. If you go to California, we don't have it as a law. We have it as a defense. And then you may even have a higher threshold to even bring a civil case And when you're talking about federal charges, I think Brother Holder said it right. Change the laws, because if they don't bring a civil rights case and they don't win it and it doesn't meet the threshold, then you're going to say that Holder and President Obama ain't doing nothing for us.
Well, now let me ask you this. The young lady. Yeah, the young lady that was defending herself against her ex-husband's stalker, domestic violence, fires a weapon in her house in the air. She's doing 20 years.
Well, I think that's just as wrong. And all these great lawyers, that armchair quarterback, Monday morning quarterback, the Trayvon Zimmerman situation, they need to go down there and help this sister. Now, if they prove that it was some issue about maybe the kids being in the next room or something like that, there may be some different mitigating circumstances. If we don't know all of the points and all the situation, all I know is we need the good lawyers to come together. Like they came together with Thurgood Marshall and Brown versus Board of Education, then we can come together again.
But is it part of the problem, though, when we look at something like a Trayvon Martin case or any of the highly publicized televised trials? Most people do not watch trial from start to finish. As an attorney who's actually done this stuff before,
right,
most of it is pretty...
Then he should be going down there to volunteer.
Don't talk about it. Be about it, Avenue. What you going to do, bro?
Yeah, as soon as somebody writes me a check, I'll be more than happy to purchase.
Oh, you one of them. You need money for
that. You're darn right I am.
Oh, you one of them.
Yep.
See, back when the struggle in the 1960s, we did was fry some chicken. And Dr. King came down for some good fried chicken peach cobbler because them sisters was cooking.
I can't
and
eat fried chicken. Got cholesterol problems.
Well, you need to exercise. You need to do something. That's why President Obama giving us health care reform. For you.
No, he's not. He's getting health care for me to take my hard-earned money.
So now, is this why the talk is the hottest daytime talk show on network television now?
Well, I'm glad that we feel that we're the hottest, but there's room enough for everybody. Whoopi and Sherry are my good friends. You know, we all stick together as a people, you know what I'm saying? But this is America. There's opportunity for everybody. Me, Julie Chen, Aisha Tyler, Sharon Osbourne, Sarah Gilbert, we all get along. We have great conversation. We hope that you will enjoy the show. We got the cover of Prevention coming out. I got an afternoon radio situation I'm doing. So it's not against you, though. Not against you.
Okay. Yeah, that's Darlene from Roseanne, right?
Say it again.
Sarah Gilbert, Darlene.
Sarah Gilbert, Darlene from Roseanne. You know
Dr.
Sharon Osbourne. Yes. So, I mean, right now, everything's great. My sorrows of Zeta Phi Beta are here having their leadership conference, and the brothers of Phi Beta Sigma just had their conference. The Deltas that had their centennial. But if you anywhere near Indiana, you need to come. We need to be 10,000 strong, 20,000 strong. If not now, when? We're going to do it right now, and I'm a Republican saying this.
Oh,
and that's right. And I'm going to Chicago to do my gigs. So everybody talking about, she ain't coming to the Erie Crown. Yes, I am. I'm going to get in the car this afternoon. I'm going to go do my gig. I will drive back probably about 12 midnight, get here about 3 a.m. I'll take a nap. I will be at the march tomorrow, and I'm asking everybody to join, and not just black people, brown people. This is an American issue. It could have been your child. If you are white, you better come join us, because it could have been your child.
And that'll be at the federal courthouse on Ohio Street between Meridian and Pennsylvania tomorrow from noon to 1:30. And after the rally, come on down and attend Indiana Black Expo. It's not about going to the rally and then go home. Come on down there, one, because the rain won't start till afterwards.
If you really want to make a difference, stay your butt down here till about 9:30 at night.
And walk around with the Faith Patrol.
Faith Patrols and the police community help keep these young people in line.
Okay, we will do that. We will definitely do that.
I will be there to
But
to
the
count.
Movement starts here. And Amos, I got to thank you for allowing me to be on your airway and just keep praying for us. Oh, also, I got to say this too. I am raising money for HBCUs. I got an announcement. I will bring it to you, and we're raising money for all 105. Just think if we could take those children out of Chicago and say, go down south and get you an education, or go to Ohio and get you an education. And it's not just for African Americans. We may have started historically black, but we are raising money for Hispanics, because in Texas, Hispanics under the DREAM Act can go to school, go to a HBCU, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender, disenfranchised whites. So when you hear me talking about raising money for HBCUs, and we got a black bank, Certus Bank, C-E-R-T-U-S, is going to collect the money, and we're going to raise that money. Don't talk about it, be about it. God bless America.
Sister Cheryl Underwood, the star, comedian, star of CBS's The Talk. That's the only talk show where the boss's wife is the host.
That's right.
Wait a minute. Do y'all get on Julie because she's the referee of the Big Brother, and them some crazy people on Big Brother?
Man, let me tell you something about Big Brother. Now, I know we all like, man, when she come out the house already, But I think that's a good reflection of a portion of society. I am proud that CBS did not edit that girl, did not remove her from the house. Let the world see a reflection, because there are people like that working with you at your job. There are people like that that are around you, that cheesing in your face. I think that was an excellent thing to show this girl and leave her in the house as long as possible, because it's something we deal with every day. And I'm glad that the brother told the sister, don't do nothing physical, don't get in that girl's face, because she done flip your bed up, because had it been me, Big Brother house would have been tore up. I would have lost my good CBS job, but I'm not going to do that. I've learned how to control myself. I meditate. I pray.
You meditate.
That's right. I exercise.
Because I don't want you to lose your CBS job, and I have to beat up on less than them, and then I'll never get a job.
Leslie Moonves is the coolest white boy brother. You see, he got the curly wavy hair. I think he mixed with something. He is the coolest, downest. Julie is the most fun. Let me tell you, you can't go drinking with Miss Osborne, because she drink from the top shelf. She got that England money. Man, it's the bar. Sarah Gilbert, man, I have a good time.
You hang it.
Oh, man, I'm not going to lose my good CBS job now. You know, I tell the people, email me. Send me a text message. Tweet me at Cheryl Underwood. If you ever see me bucking my eyes, or can I say the C word?
No.
This is
the light, inspiration right. station.
No, not that word. Okay, rack. What's the end of rack?
Rack.
That's right. If you ever see me bucking my eyes, write me a letter and go, you need to back that up, sister, because you are representing people. I know that I represent our people. We're the only race of people that represent each other. But that's an honor. I'm thankful that God let me live this long to get this good CBS job. And off of that, everything else will come. The reason that I'm here is because I have a platform. CBS covering the march, they're going to cover me and you together. Because it ain't going down unless it's Amos Brown. That's your new saying.
It is Sister Cheryl Underwood. The star of the talk
people
on CBS.
You are. People just gravitate.
I'm trying to get.
That's more for you.
I want a picture of the crowd that's gravitating up there. That's more.
Beautiful.
Get a picture of the folks here.
You broadcasting tomorrow from here?
No, we're doing Medically Speaking tomorrow, and then they let me rest. You know, don't ask. On the third.
I'm eating better because I need to lose weight, you know, and that's one of the things that we're also talking about. I got a book coming out. I got a book. It's an autobiographical book, but it talks about how you learn from all the tragedy in your life and why I'm a Republican and why I'm going to stay a Republican. Me and Chris Christie might run, but I ain't running up against Joe Biden.
I think
Joe Biden, that's the honey boo-boo of politics. He might win it. I love Joe Biden.
It is Cheryl Underwood. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our many moments of Amos and Abdul on a Friday. I think we have both exhausted ourselves. And that's what Indiana Black Expo, that's what Expo Friday really is all about. It's just
a very spirited discussion.
Spirited fellowship. You never know who's going to stop by.
And you never know who you're going to end up working with 20 years later.
Yeah, you never.
You may
have comments or whatever on what you've heard today. 239-1310, 239-1310, Amos and Abdul for a Friday on Monday. Oh, Monday. Not only is the annual asking people what was good about Expo, what was not so good, what could be improved upon, everything from the activities inside the convention center, the free concert, the role of the men and women of law enforcement. Last year was the first year. Nobody called with anything negative to say about law enforcement, the police role. That is on Monday. Also, two exclusive one-on-one interviews, one with the legendary Billy D. Williams.
Lando Calrissian.
Lando, as well as talking about his hobby, which is part of his avocation. He is a great painter. Worked first with oils, acrylics. He has galleries. He has exhibits of his art. And we talked to him about that in movies, and will he be in Star Wars 7? There's been a lot of buzz and talk about that. Conversation with Billy D. Williams and a conversation with filmmaker Spike Lee. We talked
Spike?
To be very honest with you, it was touch and go as to whether we'd have the privilege of talking to Spike Lee. Spike Lee rarely gives interviews to any media.
It's like Woody Allen.
He's like Woody Allen, rarely gives interviews, and is not. He is smart enough to deliberately think before he speaks. So in the interview, people are going to hear on the show Monday a lot of pauses. And it kind of surprised me, and then I realized he's smart enough to think before he speaks.
Or you just have Chris edit pauses out to move the interview along.
No, actually, I want people to hear. I want people to hear the pauses. The other thing is, we started in the conversation. There were a couple of times where, and he was looking over because a couple of the OJs were in the room where we were doing the interview. And he's kind of looking over there, and I'm trying to move the microphone, but he almost talked in lyrics of music, but in kind of a musical rhythm, sort of like a jazz rhythm. His dad was a musician, mom was a teacher, and I think some of that comes out. We got to asking him not about pro basketball, but asking about Butler, because he had spoke at Butler. That's the only time I've met him was at Butler University Celebration of Diversity eons ago, and talked about them being in the Big East, and I knew, being a New Yorker, Big East is important. He said, hey, that's not the Big East now, is not the Big East back in the day, and started mentioning a lot of the great players that played in the Big East. And the way he was mentioning them, I could imagine a Coltrane melody or a Terrence Blanchard melody under his words as he was talking. It was very, very interesting. We talked a little about, obviously, the Trayvon thing. Is that something for a movie? His answers are surprising. He's got a new movie coming out, his interpretation of a legendary Korean movie that deals with violence and misdirection called Old Boys. So it's a very interesting. That'll also be on the program on Monday.
Now, here's a billion-dollar question. Did he apologize for Mo Better Blues?
We didn't ask about specific films. One of the problems with talking, even with Billy Dee, when somebody has had that long body of work, it's very difficult to ask him, what was your favorite role? That's like asking a parent, what's your favorite child?
I would think that, for me, in that situation, and people really should listen to the interviews on Monday, it's always interesting to, like, you know, maybe not necessarily what was your favorite role, but what do you most remember the most, or what was maybe most challenging? And did you ever think that playing, for example, Billy Dee Williams playing Lando Calrissian in a couple Star Wars films, you know, would be the hallmark signature for a generation of kids who never saw you in Lady Who Sings the Blues or some of the other work that you've done.
But I think both of them, I think Spike has an image of being brash and larger than life. And in private, he's very introspective. I mean, it's a totally different animal than what you see or what people's public perceptions of him are. Billy Dee, the first time I was privileged to meet him, he struck me as shy, and maybe that is the reaction to playing all these larger-than-life characters over the years, or playing yourself. And I think they're both comfortable in their own skins. They're both comfortable with the choices that they've made artistically and creatively. And they were just extraordinarily gracious. I think you heard Billy Dee's remarks. I heard Spike's, and Spike's remarks to the luncheon I think were what a lot of people didn't expect him to say. And I thought he was very gracious. He dealt with the Trayvon, you know, a little bit. He showed respect to Pacer fans and brought his humor. And obviously he was not dressed to impress in business dress.
No, he was dressed the way Spike Lee would expect Spike Lee to be dressed.
Yes. but he did come out in the Knicks orange and black. I think people thought he was going to come out.
He did have a New York Yankees hat, which I'll – maybe for one day.
They're struggling. And
year?
Billy, did you hear it? Were you there when?
No, I was walking over for Billy Dee Williams' speech. That I missed.
I think that's the one we all wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Because he really looked like he, I think both were grateful to be here this year.
Yeah, because I've been to some expos where you could tell the award recipient was just kind of going through the motions and sort of, well, you know, kind of nice, but what really struck me, though, was Tisha Campbell, like I said, the thing that she did, and like I said, having followed her career for so long, because remember the first time I ever seen her was, you know, the old Little Shop of Horrors television musical back in, like, oh gosh, 1986. We said she was 16 years old. Then to, you know, see her go through Martin, and then, you know, School Days, and some of the other things.
So you got all of that and more. Expo continues tonight. The exhibit hall will be open until 8 o'clock this evening. Come on down. It is $10, unless you've already got your ticket in advance. $10. Kids 12 and under, accompanied by an adult, are free. So bring the kids down. We are seeing a bunch of kids. It is also Children's Day. That Children's Day is ending. The free concert tonight, the OJs at Midnight Star, 6 to 10 down at American Legion Mall downtown. Tomorrow, the exhibit hall opens from 10 until 9. And then Sunday, the exhibit hall is open from noon until 6. Come on down. It is your celebration. It's family strong. We'll be here tomorrow, guest hosting, medically speaking. Dr. Virginia Cain will be joining us. We're talking about a lot of different health issues. Monday, it is our annual evaluation, your evaluation of Indiana Black Expo, what was good, what was not so good, what needs to be improved upon. Tuesday, we'll be live at the Marriott East, a special program with AARP dealing with the growing issue of elder care and how we're going to deal with elder care. And then on Thursday, we'll deal with expungement, and then
we're back.
Yeah, how are you going to keep us down on the farm when we've been out here? He's Abdul Akib Shabazz. I'm Amos Brown. Come on out and enjoy Indiana Black Expo. I'll see you Monday in studio live at 1.